This year is brought to you by TorahWeb.org.
Okay, so we're short. We're having a little bit of a sikhsikh over here in case anybody noticed. Okay.
Thank you.
So before everyone starts to talk, I'm going to say a big thank you, a big shkach. It is a privilege. I can't say it's the first time Rabbi Lubitz is in town in Bergenfield. That I think I can say you'll agree to. I think he's been there once or twice in the last 24 hours. So, Baruch Hashem, it is a tremendous chos for us to welcome Rabbi Lubitz back here to hear his words of Torah and insight. Rabbi Lubitz has become a Rebbe. I'm in the Trump here. Rabbi Lubitz has been a Rebbe of so many of us in regular shiurim, and how long the Mishnah Berurah bites, the Mishnah Halacha bites down there, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 7 minutes, somewhere in the middle, in his spreading of Torah in such a fascinating, unique way. He's really captured the hearts and souls of so many in our extended community. So you know, it's a tremendous kavod as a friend and as a someone who we Baruch Hashem, you know, have had the schus to work together with in formal and informal ways. It's a tremendous man's God for us to welcome the Lubitz.
Thank you.
Is that right?
Thank you, Rabbi. Rishos Moreno, Hagonor of Tversky Shlita, Rishos Tamar Das, Hagonor of Sabalovsky Shlita. You know, just to share an emotion as I walked into this room, every time I come to this shul, it fills me with a sense of satisfaction that such a special kehila and such a special rav finally have a building that is befitting of what goes on here, of the level of Torah and Tefillah and Avodas Hashem that happens here. I just find it very moving. Every time I come, you should continue to be Matzliach in enhancing the Avodas Hashem of everyone in the community, and by extension, so many people who look to this community and this shul as a model for the rest of us. Having said that, also, those who came for Rav Tversky and feel like you have to stay because someone is speaking after him, please feel free to leave. I will not judge you. I will not be upset in the slightest. And that includes, of course, Rav Tversky. One of the strengths of Torah Web, of this wonderful organization of Torah Web, is that the advertising is very strong. So a lot of people see the topic before I give the shiur, and even before I prepare the shiur. So when people saw the topic relates to misrepresentations of the Torah, I think the official title is Identifying and Reacting to Misrepresentations of the Torah, so people were confused. Is there something going on that I wasn't aware of? You know, is there some hack that I'm missing? People started Googling furiously, trying to figure out. The hackers were very disappointed in themselves. What am I not on top of? What did I miss in this time? There were a handful of Marbitzei Torah that even reached out to me. Please don't talk about me. I wasn't thinking about talking about you. In fact, there is no scandal that I'm aware of, as much as I hate to disappoint everybody. But that provides us with a certain opportunity. Because instead of reacting to a particular scandal, we have the opportunity, instead of taking shots at anybody, which is something that I would be loath to do in general, particularly in Rabbi Sabalovsky's shul, where you all know your Rav is so extremely careful to steer completely clear of saying anything that can be perceived as derogatory about another person, so I couldn't possibly go down that road, but instead, it gives us the opportunity to be preemptive and to talk about what would be a warning sign that would allow us to discern what is authentic and inauthentic Torah Hashkafa. How would I know when I see it? How would I know to at least have my antenna up to look a little more closely and not accept whatever is being put in my path? And that way, when it comes up, and sure as the sun will rise in the morning, there will always be people who utilize Torah to push some agenda that doesn't exactly fit properly in the Torah Hashkafa. How can we identify it? How can we be aware of it? Now, broadly, there is a concept of Torah Shelo Lishma, and we're well familiar with this concept. The Gemara Pesachim Daf Nun directs us that Li'olam Yasok Adam B'Torah Mitzvos Af Al Pi Shelo Lishma Shemitoch Shelo Lishma Balishma, that there's a certain type of Torah Shelo Lishma that is desired, that's good, that we should embrace. And it relates to Parshas Balak, because the Gemara says in Sota Daf Mem Zayin, Shebeschar Arboim Ushnayim Karbonos Shehikriv Balak Melech Moav Zachav Yatsim Menurus that Shiyatza Mimena Shlomo, Shekasubeh Elef Olos, Yala Shlomo. He was rewarded, Balak, generations later, to have Shlomo descend from him on account of his 42 karbanos that were brought Shalolishma. So Shalolishma is good in a certain sense, and in another sense, Chazal tell us that Shalolishma is terrible, that it's a Samhamavas, that it's Noach Lo Shalonivra when a person is Osik in Torah Shalolishma. And Tosus writes that there are two types of Shalolishma. There's Shalolishma where a person engages in Torah and mitzvos because they're looking for kavod, and that's the kind that should be initially embraced with the hopes that ultimately it will lead to a sense of lishma. And then there's shalol lishma lekanter, people who try to learn Torah with the intention of just causing trouble, of causing problems for genuine talmidei chachamim and for Torah Jews. But we're going to focus today on a third kind of shalol lishma, the kind of Torah that is not only inauthentic in its intent, but in its content. That the actual content that's being presented is inauthentic, even though on the surface it may seem to be authentic. Neither of those, I believe, is what Tosfos is talking about. Tosfos is talking about authentic Torah with different intentions. Intentions of kavod, intentions of lekanter. So how does one identify such things? So I'm just going to highlight a few categories that I think are worthy of being aware of, so that when we see it, we can properly identify it. The first category is one that is actually not malicious in the slightest. And although it may present us with a certain misrepresentation of Torah, it is not the intent of those who are presenting it to misrepresent it, and nor are they necessarily doing anything wrong. But that is that one needs to be aware of the phenomenon that Rav Schachter has spoken about many times, that listed among the many mumin of that would invalidate a Kohen from being makriv karbanos in the Beis HaMikdash is a sarua, someone whose limbs are not symmetrical. One arm is noticeably longer than the other, an eye is larger than the other. Rav Nissen Alpert in his hesped for Rav Moshe Feinstein, I think Rav Nissen Alpert himself was nifter not that long later, he was already very ill at the time that he gave the hesped, he mentioned that many gedolim that he had met in his lifetime, he felt suffered in a sense from this mum, gedolei Torah. Some were very, very meticulous in a particular area and not as much in another area. Some were very well versed in certain areas of Torah and not as well versed in other areas of Torah. And in Rav Nissen Alpert, Zichron Levracha's assessment, the only gadol b'Torah, or one of the few gedolei Torah that he had encountered, that he thought was perfectly symmetrical, that everything fit, was his Rebbe Rav Moshe Feinstein. So a misrepresentation of the Torah can be as subtle as disproportionate emphasis on one area over another. And it's even true in assessing a Talmud Chacham. I once had a conversation with a group of Rabbanim, with Rav Asher Weiss, and we were in his office, and there were a bunch of Svarim, you know, obviously, in his office, and one of the Rabbanim had I don't know if you call it the chutzpah, or just was seized by the moment, and said, Rebbe, when was the last time you bought a sefer with your own money? You know, like you get to a certain madrega and people just keep sending you Svarim. So he said, that's an interesting question. He said, Tshuvas Minchas Shlomo, I think, was the last sefer I bought with my own money when it came out, Shlomo Zalman's Tshuvas. But he launched into a discussion of Svarim and what the style of different Svarim is. And he said that, you know, there are topics, these Likud Svarim that are very popular nowadays, where there's some guy that spent 15 years learning the topic of, I don't know, anything, Amir al-Nachri, Yom Tov Sheni, whatever it might be, and spent 15 years researching every single tshuva that was ever written, and he wrote a 5-volume set on Amir al-Nachri. Right? Rav Asher said, he will know more about Amir al-Nachri. He's going to find a lot of Maror Makomos that I will not find, and that's very useful to me. It's very useful to be able to have such a thing to consult with. And as Rav Asher was saying it, I was thinking to myself, if I ever had a shaila about Amir al-Nachri, would I call that guy or would I call Rav Asher Weiss? And it's obvious to me that I would sooner call Rav Schachter, Rav Asher Weiss, someone who doesn't have that, again, it's not a bad mum in this sense. It's a person who's contributing something to Klal Yisrael. But if they see the entire world through the glasses of Amir al-Nakhri, then they're not seeing a proportional sense of what the world is. This can also come in the form of advocates for certain halachic positions. And again, I'm not speaking in terms of those who are doing the advocating. I'm talking in terms of us, the consumer, that we have to appreciate what we're receiving may not be perfectly balanced. I'll give a simple example. And over here, again, I'm not afraid to give, in this particular case, I'm not afraid to give actual examples, because I don't think I'm casting aspersions on anybody. There was a great Talmud Chacham who lived in my neck of the woods, in Far Rockaway, which is near where I live. His name was Rabbi Blumenkrantz, Zichrono Levracha. And he published for years a Pesach guide that told people what is chametz, what's not chametz. And Rabbi Blumenkrantz was entitled to his own opinions, as a great Talmud Chacham is, and he was the only show in town. There was no OU Pesach guide, there was no Star K Pesach guide, there was no CRC Pesach guide, there was no one else doing it. So you had, because he was the only show in town, everyone just assumed that whatever he was presenting was the mainstream opinion. So there were a lot of people that were throwing out all their shampoos and, you know, whatever else in advance of Pesach, because that was what was presented as just by virtue of the fact that it was the only one on the market, it was what people assumed, what an uneducated consumer would assume is the only opinion. Now we know that there are many other opinions in halacha. Again, nothing wrong on behalf of the person who's doing the presenting, but we as the consumer need to be aware that sometimes a one-sided presentation, by definition, we're not receiving the proper picture. I just had, there's a wonderful organization that's sponsored by the Aguda called Chayim Aruchim. And it was founded to make sure that halacha determines end-of-life medical decisions and not the pressure of physicians who are coming from a non-Torah perspective. The poskim for the organization are sincere, big Hasidish Talmidei Chachamim. Their opinions are not necessarily held by the poskim in this room and by the people that people in this room would ask their shailas to, but they have an organization. And if it's when you Google it, that's the organization that shows up. So we, the consumer, they're doing nothing wrong. They're doing the right thing. But we, the consumer, sometimes aren't receiving the proper view of what the breadth of the Torah perspective actually is. So that's one fairly benign example, but it is important, and particularly in the case of end-of-life decisions, it can actually be extremely, extremely important. A second area, and this I would like to focus on a little bit more, because I think we're more susceptible to it nowadays than probably ever in the past, is that, and it's a little bit thornier, is that it's important to be wary when assessing if Torah is being presented authentically when there's too much buzz or PR around a Torah personality, or a presentation of Torah, a presentation of a Torah viewpoint. Again, not always a bad thing, but at least we have to look with a discerning eye. Whatever glitters is not gold. Just because we see that something catches our attention, sometimes it's a reflection of some great value that's beneath the surface, but sometimes it's not. Rav Lapiansky writes that in this world there are three types of beauty. We have what's described as a type of yofi that is purely external, something that appears attractive from the outside but has no inner value. Sheker hachein vehevel hayofi. It's a false advertisement. It seems like it's very attractive. It seems like it's something that you're interested in. People, sometimes personalities are like that, who look kind and sweet from their external appearance but are like chazer showing you their split hooves. Then there's a second type of yofi, the kind of external beauty. It is yofi, it is beautiful, but it draws our attention to valuable content. It's an accurate reflection of the beauty that lies within. A beautiful cover on a sefer that may draw us to look. The reason there's an expression, don't judge a book by its cover, is because people judge a book by its cover. That's why there's a need for that expression. And sometimes what's inside is really great. We dress up Sifrei Torah in mantles that cost thousands of dollars, silver taros that cost even more. That's a concept of hidur mitzvah. And that's a very special kind of yofi, very different from the first kind of yofi. And then finally, sometimes, the value on the inside of a vessel exceeds the outside packaging. It's as though the bag is straining to hold its contents because the beauty on the inside is tearing apart the outside at the seams. The outside can't possibly ever reflect the beauty that's hidden inside. Eretz Yisrael is referred to as an Eretz HaTzvi. Chazal tells us it means just like a tzvi looks like its skin is too small for its body. Right? A deer looks like when you put on that suit the day after Yantiv, right? Where it doesn't quite contain that which it's meant to contain. Eretz Yisrael's physical exterior will stretch to hold Klal Yisrael, but the beauty of the Klal Yisrael and of the Kedusha that lies within Eretz Yisrael can never be appreciated with physical eyes. That's the beauty of a great tzaddik. We mentioned Rav Moshe Feinstein before. He was not an imposing or impressive looking person, but those who met him knew that they were in the presence of greatness. It was jumping out at you. So when looking at things that are marketed heavily, sometimes it's yofi number one, sometimes it's yofi number two. Sometimes it's the kind of yofi that is covering something that is quite ugly beneath the surface, and sometimes it's actually an accurate reflection of beauty that's beneath the surface. You need a discerning eye. When you come across every now and then someone who represents that sense of hod, that's a certain type of godless that is not as appreciated in our generation. And that needs to be sought out, that you need to look for, that you need to find. I just this past Shabbos, in my community, we suffered in Nebuch a terrible tragedy last week. A young 39-year-old man was killed in a car accident with four little children. And his father-in-law came over to me on Friday night. I always knew this. He was a member of my shul. I always knew he was very into tefillah. A good person, good father, regular guy in the shul. And his father-in-law came over to me Friday night and he said, you know, he heard something about his son-in-law, that his son-in-law was makbid not to daven mincha mariv one right after the other on a weeknight, on any night. You know, he didn't like the mincha mariv minyanim. So the father-in-law said to his daughter, oh, because of zmanim, he wanted to say Kriya Shema after Tzeisa Kochavim, and she said, no, he didn't feel that he had the energy to muster the necessary kavana for two Shmona Esreis in such close proximity to one another. You think about how seriously we take a weeknight Mincha Mariv. There is beauty all around us that doesn't necessarily appear at the surface. That you really have to know how to look. You really have to know how to see what lies beneath the surface. You know, many Achronim quote a passage from a Medrash. Lama nikra shmo chazir ki asra kodesh baruch hu lachziru li Yisrael. That a chazir is something, a pig is something, that the Medrash implicitly says is going to become kosher again. The Arachayim HaKadosh explains, the Pasuk says, v'hu geira lo yigar, t'nai hu adavar. He says it's a condition. That calls man that it's not chewing its cud, it's not kosher. Avala as lavo yala geira viachsulios mutter. Our Chaim HaKadosh says, and one day the pig is going to chew its cud, and then it's going to be mutter. So he apparently takes this medrash quite literally. This medrash was not accepted without controversy. The Torah Tamima says, v'kol devar ve'elu tumuim v'neflaim ma'od diminayin lakach lo makar l'chidish niflazeh. Where did he get this from? We never find anywhere that the nature of animals is going to change other than their temperament in an allegorical way of a garze evim keves, but not that they're actually going to change. Why the chazer of all non-kosher things? So the Torah Tmima rejects it. And the Tshuvas Ginza Yosef, he says, and it's ta'arti ma'od liros Torah she'ina tamima. That I was very saddened to see a Torah she'ina tamima lasos arachayim kitoach chas v'shalom. That he thinks that the arachayim akadosh made a mistake. V'chi lo shama migodol kedushaso v'tzidkaso. Did he not know about the kedusha of the arachayim akadosh? Okay, so it's a fascinating controversy. But what's the point? What's the idea? To the extent that the medrash exists, doesn't exist. What's the idea? The idea is that in this world, there could be such a thing as a chazir. There could be such a thing that presents itself as having split hooves, but it's not a proper reflection of what it really is, of what its true essence is. The Kli Yakar explains that the distinguishing characteristic of the chazir is that it's a terrible sheker. It shows us the split hooves, even as internally it doesn't chew its cud. There's nothing more despicable in our religion than something that dresses itself up as kosher, but is really chazir treif. And now we understand why the pig would have to chew its cud, the asalava. Because we live in a world that tolerates sheker. But there are entire industries that are built on misrepresentation. Entertainment, to marketing, to retail, sometimes finance and accounting. But La'asalava will live in a world where Umala Ha'aretz Deyas Hashem, Kemayim Liyam Mechasim, everything's going to be transparent and true. The pig would no longer be able to exist as it is. But so long as we're in this world, we need to be able to identify. And we need to be able to see that when something is presented in a certain way, it doesn't necessarily mean that that's what it is. Another example, I'll try to cut short. Another example, well, let's say the final example, is to beware of secular influence. The Torah is timeless. The principles of the Torah never change. Ani mamin be'emunah shleima shezos haTorah lo tehi mukhlefes. Sometimes halacha looks like it's changing based on changing circumstances, as Rav Shachter often points out. Halacha doesn't change, the principles are the same, the reality sometimes changes, and therefore the application of the halacha changes. Rav Shachter told us that Rav Soloveitchik insisted that we not apologize for Jewish tradition. We live in a misguided society, and its values conflict oftentimes with our Mesorah, as Rav Tursky Shlita mentioned before. The society is mistaken. Our Mesorah teaches us how an ideal society operates. And we have to embrace our Mesorah, not apologize for it, not be embarrassed by it. We shouldn't imply through word or action that the Torah or the Chachamim were unfair, were morally deficient because they hadn't yet progressed as far as we have. A very skilled Talmud Chacham can explain Torah in a way that is palatable and even appealing to the uninitiated. But the more common phenomenon in attempts to appeal to the uninitiated is to engage in some level of ziyuf haTorah, to water down the Torah, to make it seem like it's really saying whatever society is saying, and that is a ziyuf haTorah. Torah is pure. It can't be influenced by secular values. Secular studies, important. We have to know about math and biology and physics, even just to understand, botany even, to even just understand Zrayim, to understand parts of the Torah. Studying English or other languages gives us the tools for communication, allows us to more sharply articulate our points, and that is very welcome. But when it comes to values, the Torah values stand alone. And those whose values seem to be coming from society around us will not have staying power. We've seen it even, forget our own lifetimes, in the past couple of years. Now, the whole discussion around the gender confusion that you have in this country, you know, literally with one election, like the pendulum just swung in the other direction. It's not in the right place yet. But you just see how fickle it is. How it could be here one day and there a different day. The Torah values are eternal. And when one hears something that sounds like it's not really representing some timeless value, and it's trying to fit this square peg into the round hole, it's trying to fit the Torah and shape the Torah in the image of society, one needs to be very, very cautious. So, as far as identifying misrepresentations of the Torah, we've highlighted three areas. We've highlighted the area when there's a lack of proportionality. We've highlighted an area where there's too much buzz around something that maybe should at least cause us to look a little more carefully, and we've highlighted the area of what seems to be a presentation of secular values. How do we react to it? So again, we're not talking about a particular case that we need to react to. We're trying to be preemptive over here. So instead of how to react, and Judah will forgive me for veering from the title over here, we'll talk about how to preempt, how to make sure that we're not susceptible to this. Three simple etzes. First of all, find the right sources. Torah Hashkafa does not come from podcasts that interview fascinating people. It comes from Gedolei Torah, from Shiurim, from Rebbeim, having an actual relationship with an actual Rebbe, not following an influencer. Torah Hashkafa should not come from some Instagram influencer who's saying something as they're dropping off their kids at school or whatever. Torah Hashkafa comes from thoughtful people. We have to recognize who the thought leaders are and who the thought leaders aren't. I'm not denigrating the whole idea of podcasts. I spend half my life on podcasts. But we should recognize it for what it is. It's kosher entertainment at its best, you know, sometimes. But it's not thought leadership. It's not Gedolei Torah. Second, we should make sure to try to, as they say in the modern parlance, to platform the right people in public spaces. Not every time someone calls and says, you know, I'm available to speak, does that mean we should invite them to speak? We should be on the lookout for who we want to present to our communities, to our schools, to our shuls. And third, and finally, to focus on people with staying power. Now, I had a conversation a little while ago with an outstanding young Talmud Chacham, Rav Eli Reisman. He's the son of Rav Yisrael Reisman. And I remarked to him that with all the people whose stars have risen and fallen, the cream rises to the top over the course of decades of sustained greatness. And I pointed out to him that his father, Rav Yisrael Reisman, has sat in the same exact seat in the Torah V'Das Beis Medrash for over 50 years. My Rebbe, our Rebbe, Hagon Rav Shachter Shlita, has sat in the front of the same Beis Medrash for 70 years. I don't know if he was always in the front, but I sat in that, and the Beis Medrash has moved, but you get the point. For 70 years, there's a staying power to true greatness. We should look for that. It may not glitter. It may not have the best advertising. But that's often where we find that hod. That's often where we find that greatest splendor. Like you find the beauty in Eretz Yisrael, you find the beauty in Gedolei Torah, often in people that aren't looking for the attention, most often in people that are not looking for the attention. And we should be zocha to continue as a people to seek our inspiration and our education from proper Torah sources to maintain the dignity and the purity of our Mesorah.